it up. Because today, Reverend Robert Yarnell is with us. Reverend Robert Yarnell, ordained interfaith minister, what year, Robert?
2017.
So almost 3 years ago, Robert Yarnell became an interfaith minister among so many other things. A man of many talents, kind of a Renaissance man, I would say. The number of hats that he has worn during his time here at Unity of New York. When did you start here at Unity?
2003.
You knew that right off the bat.
Yeah.
So he's been a member of Voices in Unity Choir all that time since you started coming here. Since 2005.
Yeah.
Okay. He has been on the Board of Trustees wearing the president hat for a couple of years. And prayer chaplain, and I think it's time for you to hear from Robert. And so please welcome Reverend Robert Yarnell.
Good morning, Facebook family. It is great to be with you here in whatever format that takes. I remember very well the time that we all met on a soccer field in the rain. So, we are resilient. And it is my honor to be asked to premiere this broadcast from the studios of WUNY here in beautiful uptown New York. As I was preparing to do this today, it occurred to me that in a way I will be kind of a spiritual Mr. Rogers today. Speaking to each of you in the way that he did in a time of crisis. Now, Mr. Rogers is a hero of mine, and you may know that during times of crisis, like the assassination of Robert Kennedy, or after the Challenger accident, or after 9/11, Mr. Rogers went on air that night with a special episode to reassure the children and explain to them what was going on so they would feel emotionally grounded. Now, the CDC and others are guiding us right now in the appropriate response on the physical level, and that's vital. But how do we respond on the spiritual level? And that's why we're here today. So allow me to zip up my virtual cardigan and speak to you. Certainly, we have specific practices at Unity: prayer, meditation, classes, Sunday service itself. But I want to talk today about the big picture. What do we do in the face of fear? Because there's a lot of fear and genuine suffering right now. What is the antidote? After all, there's no antidote yet for COVID-19. But there is an antidote for fear. On the spiritual level, it is love. And that's my topic today, living love in the modern world. And if that sounds corny or insufficient to the moment, I understand. We throw the word around a lot, love. I want to really look deeper at that word, reinvigorating the word itself and exploring what it can mean. And I'll give some examples, real world examples from history and my own life of what is possible with love. Because as Father James Martin reminds us, lots of things have been canceled by the coronavirus, but love is not one of them. Fear is understandable right now. We are spiritual beings having this human experience. We certainly want to pay attention to the life-saving advice we hear through the media, but we can overload on the crisis part and forget our spiritual context. That's true in general. With the 24-hour news cycle, we train ourselves to focus on fear and division and miss the hope, the love, which is literally everywhere present. We believe this in Unity, right?
Yes.
There is one power and one presence active as the universe and as my life, God the good. And God, if we recall, is love. The question is, what are we experiencing right now? If we want to experience a greater flow of love, we must be that flow in action, right where we are. We're the ones to build that spiritual infrastructure, reconnecting to each other, and the building block for that infrastructure is love. After all, we're told to love our neighbor as ourselves, to love our enemies. God is love, and according to the Beatles, all we need is love. Mm-hmm. Love, love, love. Mm-hmm. But let's get real, because why not? Love in the English language has become a bit diluted through overuse. Love songs, Hallmark, the Valentine Industrial Complex. Consider all the ways we use the word. I love my partner. I love Paris. I love lasagna. Or even the sarcastic form of love. Oh, I love those people who don't even get out of the way on the subway when the door's open and there's plenty of room. Love them. So we use the word in so many ways, it's become diluted, not specific enough to capture the tremendous force that Jesus, St. Paul, and other spiritual leaders point to. Consider if I referred to the following: this office, the Taj Mahal, and the surface of the moon, all as, you know, that place. You'd probably want me to be a little more specific. Mm-hmm. We need to become more eloquent in our language of love, more fluent, if you will. It's the basis of every religion. So let's look at what we really mean by love, to become fluent. Dr. King understood the need for clarity, and so he spoke of three kinds of love, all with a Greek word. First is eros, or romantic love. Philia, love between equals, or brothers. And the most important, the highest form of love, agape. To quote Dr. King, agape is understanding, creative, redemptive goodwill to all men. It is an overflowing love which seeks nothing in return. Theologians would say it is the love of God operating in the human heart, so that when one rises to love on this level, he loves men not because he likes them, not because their ways appeal to him, but he loves every man because God loves him. 1 Corinthians 13 speaks famously of love. If I speak eloquently but have no love, I'm like a clanging cymbal. Now here's a footnote I read on that famous passage. This is from the Passion Translation. The Aramaic word for love is huba, and it is a homonym that also means to set on fire. It's difficult to fully express the meaning of this word and translate it into English. You could say the Aramaic concept is burning love, or fiery love, coming from the inner depths of the heart as an eternal energy, an active power of bonding hearts and lives in secure relationships. The Greek word is agape, which describes the highest form of love. So already we're bringing life back into the word. We understand the power of the word in unity to create our reality, or, perhaps more accurately, to create our experience of reality. Now, I love this notion of huba, which is a homonym, which means it sounds the same as, like, two, two, and two. Huba is a homonym for to set on fire, and that's the Aramaic word for love, which means it's one of the words Jesus himself would have used. And I think that informs the concept for me. I also came up with an acronym because I like to play with words. LOVE. Lavish, overflowing, vivacious energy. It's lavish because, like Bishop Spong says, we should love wastefully. It's overflowing because it comes up through us into the world. It's vivacious because it is of life and life-giving. And of course, it's an energy, not just something static. And if we want the verb, that would be lavish, overflowing, vivacious expression. So that's what I mean when I say the word love. And I'm trying to keep that in my consciousness, to take love seriously and to take responsibility for my part. Because if the world is to be more loving, we must shake loose our old ways each of us, doing our part to move the needle in the corner of the cosmos we inhabit. We need to put love into practice by living it. So perhaps we let someone off the hook today. Stop the gossip mid-sentence. Say a loving no. Ask someone's name, who you see every day, and then become genuinely curious about their humanity. Call someone to say hello and pray with them or just check in, especially now. And did you see, just yesterday, the Italians at a specified time came out on their balcony and applauded for all the healthcare workers. Imagine what that would feel like for these healthcare workers that are working around the clock to hear that applause coming spontaneously from the balconies in Italy. I found that to be an extraordinary expression of love. And then here's a very, very important thing you should do. Speak kindly to yourself. What becomes possible in your life when you're kind to yourself? After all, it says, love your neighbor as yourself, right? You can't give love from an empty storehouse. It must overflow, so it must flow in us first. So, if you want the world to improve, light the fire of love within you, where God dwells. Then you'll enter each room with a new energy that people will feel. Just that will transform you and them. Now, love yourself doesn't mean indulge the ego, as in, I'm the best and only me. No. This is agape love. We are radically equal and equally fabulous. Become the best parent you can imagine toward yourself, both encouraging and gently challenging. How you talk to yourself affects the world you encounter. I truly believe that. Now, for example, if I'm out in the world and I start arguing with someone who's not in the room, generally I've interrupted myself by saying, Robert, what are you doing? Quiet, there's no one here. What are you, crazy? What I'm trying to do now is something more along the lines of, hey, buddy, it's okay, they're not here right now. Why don't we just enjoy the moment? Take a breath. Whew, yeah, it's good. Or simply, Robert, calling myself back to sanity. Very often I laugh because our humanity is in fact funny. We can allow mistakes, learn from them, and forgive ourselves gently on the small stuff as we move into the next highest vision of who we can be. Not in history, but in this moment. And then we overflow that love into the world. Now, everything I've said so far is theory. Exploration of the terms we're using, very important that we be on the same page with our terms, especially one as big as love. But some of us, including me, need a good story for the message to land. So I'd like to share some stories from my life, others' lives, and history. Examples from the smallest to the biggest of living love in the modern world. The first one is from my life a couple of weeks ago. I was running late to work, thinking about the news and everything going on and what I had to get done. And as I got on the bus and put in my Metro card, I heard, hey, how you doing? I looked up, it was the bus driver. Oh, thank you, very well. I went to my seat and I heard over and over, hey, how you doing? Hey, how you doing? In that wonderful New York way that is not effervescent and overflowing, he greeted each person in that line getting on the bus. And he was my teacher in that moment. Hey, how you doing? Now, there's that great story that Carlos tells, and I'll just reference it here because he tells it much better, of when he was cast with a guest starring role on Kojak. And he went out to Queens on the subway, got off, and saw someone in need, so he kneeled down and spoke with them and prayed. And of course, he went overtime, looked at his watch, realized he was late, and ran to the studio, and he'd already been replaced. Now, it wasn't until years later that that person showed up in the hug line after one of Carlos's sermons and said, you may not remember me, but you were an actor going to something like Kojak, and you prayed with me. And after you left, a healing energy went up through me, and it changed me. So imagine that, something that would seem like a mistake at the time, a tragedy, a guest starring role on Kojak. But instead, we have Reverend Carlos Wayne Anderson. And I think in the grand balance of things, we got the better deal. A woman, now in her 80s, says that when she was a student at Cornell in the 1950s, she used to visit her boyfriend in Rochester and stay in town. She writes, "One time, when I was staying overnight there at the local YMCA, I was sitting in the modest lobby, waiting for my boyfriend to pick me up, and I noticed a janitor, a rather elderly man, pushing a broom nearby. So I asked him a bit about himself, like how long he'd been working there. Very, very many years, he said. And before leaving, I asked him his name. In turn, he asked me for my address. A few days later, to my surprise, I received a note from him scrawled on a piece of paper. All I remember about the note is that he said that in all the years he'd worked at the YMCA, no one had ever asked him his name. This simply broke my heart in two. I was absolutely devastated, and today, as I write this, remembering his note brings me to tears yet again." Now, this story is meaningful to me because the woman is my mother, who's watching out there with you right now in Seattle, Washington. And she used to tell that story to me as a child and growing up, and it made an impact. Imagine that, the importance of just asking someone's name could be much bigger than we ever imagined. Marriage equality, something as big as that, it didn't happen because of one big leader. No, it happened through millions of moments over time, small miracles, changes in perspective that began to echo and reverberate through our culture. Love. Love wins. And finally, a story that I've always found very helpful. I've told it to people over the years, including at seminary, and as I prepared for this talk and read the story, I discovered a startling coincidence, a big wink from God that said, "Yes, this is a good story for you to tell, Robert." I think you'll understand in a bit. But first, here is that piece of history. After World War I, the world allowed Germans to starve, including children, and soldiers were left to die on the battlefield. The feeling was they deserved it and brought it on themselves. But one group insisted on seeing that of God in everyone, even in the enemy, the Germans. The Quakers tended to the wounded and helped feed children and adults across the country for years. Many in Germany never forgot this unexpected, unearned kindness. 2 decades later, in November of 1938, the Nazis carried out Kristallnacht, or Night of Broken Glass, when many Jews were attacked, arrested, and even murdered, and thousands of synagogues and Jewish businesses were destroyed. Many realized they needed to get out of Germany if they were to survive. It was decided that a group of ambassadors from the U.S. would go over and try to negotiate on behalf of the Jews to help those who wanted to emigrate. They chose 3 Quaker men because of the credibility Quakers had earned after World War I. To avoid any perception that their trip was for propaganda purposes, the 3 men traveled quietly and unannounced. However, as they were at sea en route to Germany, a Philadelphia newspaper found out about the trip and published details. Goebbels, the Nazi minister of propaganda, read about it and was furious, writing mockingly in a German newspaper about the 3 wise men who were coming to save Germany. Because of the bad press, when the 3 arrived, no one would speak to them. They considered going home, but decided to stay and see what they could do. Now, at the time, of course, 1938, America was not yet at war with Germany. So the American consulate general, after a few days, secured an interview with Reinhard Heydrich, a Gestapo leader instrumental in orchestrating Kristallnacht. They arrived on the appointed day at the appointed time, and Heydrich wouldn't meet with them. but he sent two assistants to speak with them, and the three men decided to make their case to them. They explained that after World War I, the Quakers had been responsible for feeding up to 1.2 million children per day, without asking anything in return, and without politicizing their efforts in any way. And now they said they would help with Jewish emigration in the same way. They then gave a list of names and specific requests which would potentially touch many lives. The assistants left to confer with Heydrich while the Quakers sat in silent worship. After 25 minutes, the German assistants returned and told the three men that Heydrich had agreed to all of their requests. As a result, 960 Jews were able to emigrate from Germany during the next 2 years directly through the Quakers' efforts, and countless more were referred to other agencies that were able to help. Now, when one thinks of evil, the Nazis always come to mind. This story to me illustrates the awesome power of love. The seeds planted after World War I bore fruit, and one of the most evil of the Nazis, the man who orchestrated Kristallnacht, agreed to their terms. Who knows how many other lives were touched, the ripple effect of that act, and the many, many ripples of love post-World War I. Loving your enemy creates miracles. The story is precious to me because it cuts through hopelessness. It says love matters, and we don't know the effect we're having. And although I've known the story for years, a couple weeks ago I discovered the names of those three Quaker men, the ambassadors who met with Heydrich in Nazi Germany. Their names were Rufus Jones, George Walton, and Robert Yardle.
What?
And when I heard that, I kind of gasped. Oh, and I swear Rod Serling appeared in the corner of the room with a cigarette. Now, I don't know if I'm related to this Robert Yarnell fellow, other than in name, but the shock of that got my attention, and it will make the story a little easier for me to remember from now on. There's a link to this story on my website, revrobert.net, if you'd like to read it, and Rufus Jones also includes it in his autobiography. Now, in conclusion, what ripples will you begin today? Imagine them going forth and doing their mighty work. Those ripples of love, however small they may seem. In fact, start with those small ones. The ego wants to personally solve global warming. But maybe the ripples of love, starting from a genuine hello, is your true purpose, your contribution today. The world needs this right now. In the midst of fear, we can demonstrate the living presence of God as love. We may never know the possibilities we helped open. One act may even ripple past our own lifetimes, as it did in Germany, across generations, as with my mother. Or we may sometimes get a wink from God to confirm that love was the right choice, as Carlos did. Hopefully, as we practice, we begin to trust and no longer need to see the effect out there in the world. We have faith that love works wonders. Lavish, overflowing, vivacious energy moves in and as you now. It is the stuff of the universe. We are children of the Big Bang, each of our atoms charged with immense positive potential. But we must see it, then express it. Not because it's a chore or duty, some kind of churchy thing we're supposed to do, another thing to feel guilty about. No, this feels great. Love feels great. Anger and rage have a rush that can wake us up for a moment, and if we've been depressed, allow us to feel something again. And I think that's why they're popular. But this kind of love is way bigger. It remakes the world. So rather than destroying, we're building, creating the world we inhabit in a godlike way. When we love like this, we join the welcome team for the living reality of love, reawakening its very definition as an expression of lavish, overflowing, vivacious energy. And that is our true nature. I love you. And I think by now, you know what I mean when I say that. God bless.
Thank you, Robert. I think I do know what you mean when you say that. Thank you. Love. Right now, through that very powerful reminder of love, we know that we can only send these ripples out from the very point of who we are, from a place of self-love. And right now, our spiritual practice is as important as ever, so we can continue to strengthen and send those ripples out of truth, of healing, of love. And as we prepare to go to that place of meditation, we check in with ourselves and remember the truth that we are holy. We are holy beings. You are holy. I am holy. We are holy. And as we know those truths, we express them in song and allow that vibration to take us to a deeper place. Even if you hum along, simply get still and open your heart and remember, you are holy. You are holy, holy, holy. You are holy, holy, holy. You are holy, holy, holy. You are holy. Let's know that again, that you are holy.
Expressing as us, the oxygen that we need delivered to every cell. Blood flows through us. The flowing nature of the universe is represented as us in each moment. And we're conscious of it now. So we shine light on that and allow that energy of love to fill us, flowing through through and as us. We see it circulating into this community, reaching those in need of love right now. The overflowing love we feel reaches them, and so it reaches people that know them as well. And we see that love expanding, increasing through this country, through our leaders, through the healthcare workers, the scientists who are working, the people who may feel alone. We express the love that we are now. We see the world united. United in a bigger purpose of overcoming any fear, illusion of separation, with a greater power of love. This awesome power flows from our core, each of us individually. We matter. In the silence now, we feel the radiating love and visualizing it spreading across the globe. We connect as one. We are one. The love you feel overflows into the world, and that today is your ministry. And so as we each bring love into the world, we know it is good. We see it. We proclaim it. And we say, thank you, God. All is truly well. Amen.